Hello, everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I am one of your hosts, Jess Geyer. I am one half of Wannabe Games, and I make tabletop role-playing games. And I am here, as always, with my co-host, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
Hello! I am Craig Campbell, and I am the owner of Nerdburger Games. And I do make a bunch of role-playing games as well, and a card game that's coming out soon. But the card game is also a role-playing game, so I guess technically I still just make role-playing games.
Cheating!
it's on a boat right now. It's on the ocean.
Yay!
I got stuff on the ocean too. It's Whee! So exciting.
Whoa, who's this disembodied voice I hear?
Ooh.
That's a guest. Hello, Matthew.
Hey.
Matt, who are you? There are so many Matts.
Oh, that's true. That's true. There are. I am Matthew Orr of Wet Ink Games, and the stuff that I have on the ocean is a card game about dinosaurs called Herd, and also our Garbage and Glory, which is our dumpster delving adventure game of raccoons doing stuff that may remind you of another game that has an ampersand in it.
Interesting. Things on the ocean.
Things on the ocean.
Things being said.
It's like an ocean party.
Look,
all the stuff's on the ocean.
Yeah, you could cut this part out, but it's like, you know, when stuff is 154%, you tell the factory to keep it in their warehouse for a while, and then it goes down to 30%, and you're like, ship it now. So,
yeah. Oh, absolutely. No, that's what I would do too. Luckily don't have anything on the ocean right now, and I rarely do. I have do all my printing here in the United States as of right now.
As a side note, I made a card game before this, and I only gave it to one person, and it's called Ocean Party because my niece was a gigantic fan of mermaids. I got artwork done of her as a mermaid at one point for a birthday. And I made a card game where it's all just like mermaids and mermen and all sorts of fishy friends going to a party. And you just want to get as many points as you can. And so I made a card game and I printed it through like Game Crafter or something like that. And
it was a
one of five. Like I kept a copy. I gave her two copies, and then there was somebody that helped to make
you
the thing.
What?
Like a friend of mine that kind of helped with it, that I gave him a couple of copies as well.
We have to put this on our episode idea list, and all three of us have to come back for this episode because all three of us have made bespoke games for one single person. And that would be a really fun topic.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not our topic today.
I've actually done it a couple of times. I did a Wizard of Oz themed one page game for during a fundraiser for my old podcast.
I think basically anybody who makes anything has probably made bespoke stuff, you know, like
probably.
Yeah.
Here's the jam that I made for you, Mom. I put your favorite two fruits in it. You know, here's the I wrote this short story on with a fancy pen on these 10 pieces of nice paper.
Here's
for you.
This mixtape.
Exactly. 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 Here, I made a copy of the soundtrack of the movie that we talked about, but I put the songs in the right order this time, like they're supposed to be in the movie because they weren't in the right order on the soundtrack.
So okay. We got to save this one.
I'm going to write it down. Don't worry.
Excellent. You're more organized than I am.
But like I said, this is not actually what we're here to talk about. We've just spectacularly veered off topic. Hopefully, unlike your boats on the ocean, which will be straight ahead. Today, we are talking about, well, I'll start introducing it, planning a session as a GM with a very special episode twist. And Matt, what does that mean?
Well, so I kind of picked the, you know, you have your list when look, I think you're in like orbit 7 of the around the guests and stuff like this. So I've seen your list of paired topics before. And so like these weren't paired up, but I saw them both and I thought I could make them the same topic, kind of like it's the same idea, but at scale. Right. So when you're a GM and you've got like a topic that you want to talk about, or comment on that's either pulled from the headlines or your personal story or whatever. Like, it's like you can put those themes into your game that you're planning as a GM, and sometimes your players are interested in exploring the topic, and sometimes they're like, we
What
just want to murder
the
the room of goblins. I do not care about
hell
like this commentary on internal politics of like,
is
goblin society,
this? Sure.
and so that's what I mean by like, I sometimes I'm inspired, and it's kind of like, I think so far a failure on my part to like create a story as a GM that players were actually interested in. Usually it's sort of like, oh yes, I acknowledge that you were trying to do something serious with this small part of the content of the session, but we weren't interested in that. Please get back to,
Regularly scheduled programming.
And so that's what I mean by like, when you come into an arc, when you come into a thing, I mean, I find it as a thing that I always almost, and not always, but like I find I'm frequently drawn to making the story of a particular session or a particular campaign about something, or at least presenting opportunity for the characters to discover something about the world in which we're playing. And that hasn't, I've almost never like gotten people on board with that, because I mean, I think that's what we should talk about, right? I mean, like, I think you can play very political games, and all actions are political. Politics is not voting. Politics is like how you structure your society and the things you talk about and stuff like that. So gaming is political in that sense. And like the things that you talk about, if you've got like a murder hobo crew and you're going around and murder hoboing everybody, like that's a political stance that the party is taking in some respects. And so to complicate that and maybe get them to change direction is like maybe sometimes the goal. But then, unless that's worked out, like we always, like you've said 100 times on the show, Jess, like, you have to talk to your players about this and get their buy-in, because if they don't want to play that kind of game, you can't like
Yeah.
surprise, this was about like something, but anyway, that's what I
Well,
mean by like a very special
as a
episode.
side note, if you know your group very well, you might be able to get away with the surprise.
Sure.
If you know that, like, this is a thing that I think they'll enjoy for one game session, we'll try it. And if they don't, then you'd just be like, well, my bad, like that didn't work. We won't do that
Right.
again. But you can sometimes surprise. But that's kind of becomes a judgment call for you, based on your relationship with your player group, and what their likes and dislikes are for the gaming experience.
Yeah. I think it's like the breadcrumb kind of thing where it's like, I'll put things out there and they can ignore them or not, and more often than not, the session run don't get into it. They don't pick up those breadcrumbs, right? They don't investigate afterwards,
So the thing about like a very special episode that it reminds me of is like a sitcom kind of thing where like suddenly like we're diving into these deep heavy topics. But even I feel like even with those very special episodes, they always telegraphed that to you by having like, here's the commercials running up to this the show. It's going to be a very special episode. And they have the different like the music might be a little bit more subdued before it's like the episode on someone gets stuck in a fridge. I'm trying to think of other very special episodes I've heard of get stuck in a
Tom Hanks
fridge.
as Uncle Ned shows up on Family Ties and turns out to be a drunk and gets in an accident, and is like, there's a very serious discussion about drinking and driving on Family Ties, which was otherwise mostly about Alex P. Keaton's shenanigans
I
a
think
lot of the time.
there's like also even on like shows that could potentially hit like a lot of special topics. I think it was Saved by the Bell. There was an episode where
Oh,
one of the
I know which
characters
one
gets
you're
like
going to talk
addicted to
about.
caffeine or something like
It's like
that, right?
caffeine pills. It's their
Yeah.
drug episode, but it wasn't drugs, it was caffeine
Caffeine.
pills. Yeah.
Caffeine is a drug,
Jesse
as
right.
I
For
drink my
sure.
coffee.
Jesse takes starts taking caffeine pills because she has to study hard and get all straight A's, and
Yeah, but the thing about those episodes is that they are often, like, even now, we're kind of giggling at like what these episodes are like, and they can be a little bit corny. How do we make sure that the tone for our players hits where we want to hit it, and they're not like, if people are kind of silly goofy in your game and you're trying to get a better tone shift or trying to introduce some of these heavier themes, how do we get them on board and make it not a parody of a very special episode?
I mean,
Ooh,
that's the thing that I think
that's
I
a
don't
tough
have an
question.
answer for. And, like, I was thinking about after I picked the topic, I was thinking about like things that I've done throughout the examples from my own play where this kind of came up. And I remember years ago, I mean, this is like 2012 or 2011 or something like that, so a while ago. And we're playing a game called Apocalypse Prevention Incorporated, and in that game, so Earth is overrun by gates that into different like hell dimensions, and so there's all these demons, but some of them can legally be here. They've worked out pacts to be on the Earth, and there are other demons who are not allowed because they're too dangerous to humanity to be here. So like you're kind of the demon cops, I guess, a little bit like Men in Black, except it's not aliens, it's demons, and you've got to go round up all these people. So I was trying to bring in like this immigration lawyer situation, and like there was this criminal, but he wasn't really a he had a lawyer who showed up, and like what I was trying to put out there was as part of like the breadcrumbs was like this is a lawyer, but like I was trying to communicate that he is like the lowest rung of like lawyering, right? Like this is like a lawyer who has not quote unquote made it because he's working these like effectively like demon immigration cases. But then everybody else was like, oh, a lawyer, he's automatically bad. And like, he's like lying about all the situation. And I'm like, it's that thing that I was saying, like I was putting out like a certain sort of communication and about the fact that I said he had like a clean, another undershirt in like all that was in his briefcase was like an undershirt and like a mayonnaise sandwich and something like that. And they were like, I was like, this is he's like living in his car to do this lawyer work. Like he's not a successful lawyer, right? And they were like, what a weirdo. It must be part of his like being a demon is he eats these mayonnaise sandwiches. And I'm like, whatever. I mean, it's like how much it a failure on my part, right, is to like communicate the tone and like control this. And then like, if you're playing a game, especially like something like the Big Dragon game, where like all problems are solved by like how fast your initiative is, like I've played games there where there's like politics. We uncovered like this was a session that I played in or whatever, where there's like a the we traced some werewolves through the sewers, and the sewer grate came up in like a big mansion, and we're like, oh no, the like rich people in this town are in league with the werewolves. We don't have the resources to fight the super rich people in the town. We're just gonna leave. Like we've uncovered the mystery that the werewolves tracked back to here, but like we're rejecting this call to adventure further, and because you can't solve corruption of the town elders by punching, like
Dang
and
it.
I mean that would become a very different game if you were to like, okay, now we've got to like, I don't know, collect evidence of who the werewolves is and initiate like a purge of like who the lycanthropy is affecting, and like you have to build consensus and buy-in from like other members of the stakeholders in the town. Like you're not playing a like draw your sword and punch, monsters at that point game. You're playing a very different game. And so that's back to the buy-in of like your players with this stuff. So I don't know. It's hard is what I'm saying. Like I don't have an answer. How do we police the tone? Not police the tone, but like set the tone and keep the tone in focus. I think it's
Right.
hard,
It is
especially
super
because
hard.
most of the games that we play are for fun. Sometimes you play the type two fun kind of games, and then but mostly you're playing the like, this is our weekly time to like, laugh about casting Fireball.
Yeah, put the world and our worries and everything aside, and just, have a diversion for a while. Yeah, it can be tough. I think I find myself thinking back to like those. You don't see it so much nowadays anymore because I think it's more accepted in certain types of shows where you have like the quote unquote very special episode that people are just aware that that sort of thing can't happen. But back in the day, in like the 80s and 90s, when there was going to be a very special episode, they advertised it. Like they told you beforehand, join us on Wednesday for a very special episode of, whatever. And so that you could potentially do that. You could kind of wrap up the session before by making kind of a point that the next episode is going to touch on a more real and more thoughtful, thought-provoking theme. To just and that gives players the the week or 2 weeks or however long it is to your next game to kind of adjust to that and be prepared for that. That's one thing.
If you were going to say something, Jess, jump in here.
Oh, I mean,
I
I was going to say that it's important to. I think that this might bring you off topic, so you finish your thought first.
well, I think it, just picking up on what you said, Craig, I think it's like the I mean that announcing, like sort of like in the sort of I don't know, like it's like if you want the story to be about drug addiction or whatever, and so like you've captured the criminal, there's your like chase scene, you're using your powers, whatever most games have feats and powers and stuff like that. You're like, oh, I'm gonna run faster, jump farther, use my grapple rules, whatever. We've captured the criminal that we were after, the MacGuffin character, we've got him, and then like it, then you're like, okay, now hey everybody, the next episode is going to be the trial. You're all like key witnesses here, and like you're going to get called to the trial. And then it's like almost like you have to set aside, like I was saying about the fighting the werewolf coven or whatever. It's like, okay, you're not going to punch this situation. This is going to be like a series of testimonies, and like you're going to have to like talk about stuff. And then that's where you bring in the like, okay, this criminal was on like these drugs, and then like they were given the drugs by like the crime lord and like who's made them dependent. And so like now you're talking about like sort of a crime family situation and a criminal enterprise and like that sort of control through, and it could be magical or supernatural or alien technology as well, but like you're commenting on this sort of like crime underworld situation of people being dependent on these substances or this technologies, but then but you foregrounded that like this isn't going to be a normal thing, right? You're going to do these in a different way, and you can still have, I don't know, intimidation checks or knowledge rolls or whatever kind of stuff that the players have on their character sheets. You can still do that kind of stuff, but like saying, like I guess what I'm saying is like the special content almost needs to go with like special gameplay rules to like make it a key that we're going to do this in a different way and talk about things in a different
Yeah.
way. I don't
I mean,
know.
I think if you've got a group that tends to be jokey and they as players they joke with each other and their characters kind of joke and rib and roast each other or whatever. But then you're going to be using Matthew's example, going into a courtroom, like that kind of garbage isn't going to fly when you're talking to people that are running legal proceedings, like assuming that this is a world where legal proceedings are a serious thing. So that gives you that gives players the warning that like, okay, this means like we can still kind of as players kind of goof and have fun, but like when we're in character and we're having characters make decisions and speaking, they have to be doing like this has got to be serious because this is we captured the guy and we have e there's evidence, but like if we blow this, like all of what we just did is for nothing because he's going to get off, the villain is going to get off or get a lighter sentence, or there's and then you can whatever else you're planning to do with the trial thing is like there's is there corruption amongst
Right,
people, like is
the
there
trial
a twister
reveals.
turn that you've planned for the trial that the players are going to have to kind of help react to, and like now we have the like some piece of evidence is introduced that was not expected, and like the prosecutor asks for a continuance, and now the players have to go out and do something to investigate something in order to solidify the case. And then they come back and they have to present that and like be serious. So they can have their break and they can be like goofy and jokey with each other out here when they're doing the thing. But then back in the courtroom, they got to get it together. And you set it up in such a way that they know, so that the players understand that, like, that's that goofiness, that screwing around is not going to fly, if you want this to go seriously. And that shifts the tone, I think, with like player that'll shift the tone with players' mindsets, that like they'll be more likely to take the quote unquote special episode seriously for whatever it is that you're delving into, if you're talking about organized crime and or the morality of law enforcement and whatever. There's a a hundred different things you can explore in a courtroom kind of situation.
And that's it's really important to have them compartmentalize, and like literally having that, like the space of a courtroom, like this moment is for this moment is for this, having them have a chance to kind of unwind, even in like shows that have like really goofy stuff and then sometimes have a really serious episode or two in a row. Like I'm thinking like a Supernatural. They have some pretty serious heavy episodes, but most of them are pretty silly. Or Psych. They have a couple really dark episodes in there, but they all have moments of levity, and I think that's really important for players if they're used to all of that levity. And then like making sure that they can kind of compartmentalize that. I think that also means like unless your players are super into it, you should probably not be endangering anybody that you haven't set up for this special episode. Like you're making an NPC, like you get them attached to the NPC so they have a connection to it, but don't make it somebody who has previously been part of their gallivanting silliness. And that also means don't punish the players for silliness that happened before your very special episode in this very special episode. Don't pull a full tone shift. I hate this in video games, especially like, oh, you're making me feel bad for the thing that you let me do and made me do, in fact, in here. Like I had no choice and I didn't know that this was going to happen. Like if I had known that there was going to be serious consequences, I probably would have taken it seriously. So making sure that you don't be like, hey, remember that silly joke you made with the king the other day? Well, now he's cutting off everybody's heads, like, 'cause he's mad at you. Like that's not fair. It's not fun. And that's a way to not make them parody your very special episode, but to turn them off of it, to make them resent it, which is another problem.
I agree. I agree with that. I think, I mean, other plenty of other examples that come to mind or whatever, but like, yeah, it's, I think it's, in part, I think it's a problem with me. Like, I am a person who wants to put these themes into the games because this is what I think stories, fetch quests and MacGuffin stories or whatever, like it's, they're so common and they're easy, but then I'm like, oh, but what if it's like important, or what if it's like, it's like, if I could just be less serious, I guess, then I wouldn't have these problems with bringing serious themes into a game.
And again, this is the issue is like if you have a game that you want to introduce and incorporate these themes into. So I'm giving you a solution here that means you have to get a time machine and rewind time. But there are plenty of games out there that are meant to handle kind of goofy, rompy style games, but have a lampshading of thematic coding on them. The one that's on my mind, because I was recently reading it, is Rebel Scum, which is an anti-fascist game with but it's like silly space opera Star Wars stuff like on top of it. Like you
Just
then
like Star
might,
Wars.
right, just like Star Wars, and then you can have like you have that little bite like, ooh, this is about something, but we're still doing this silly thing, we're still doing a fetch quest, you're still going to grab the data disk, you're still blasting stormtroopers with the serial number scratched off. You're doing all those things. There's lots of games out there like that because there are a lot of indie designers who are like you, Matt, who want to have their game be about something, but it not be super serious all the time. Moonpunk is very similar too. Like
a lot of these are anti-fascist games because apparently anti-fascists like to be silly. maybe because
Well, it's,
anti-fascist
I think,
behavior.
just as a side note, I think that you could have an anti-fascist game or an anti-capitalist game or whatever that is very, very serious, but that could be kind of draining on many players. And
It
so
is.
couching it in like, here's, there's some frivolity, there's some funny, there's some, you know, other stuff, some lightheartedness occasionally that is kind of layered over everything. It makes it more palatable.
Yeah.
Where you're still doing the thing, where you're still like, we're still slapping down the evil empire, and we're not standing for this garbage that they're pulling, but we're gonna crack jokes as we're blowing up, you know, TIE fighters with the serial
Yeah.
number scratched off.
I mean, we're dangerously close to accidentally transitioning into our other topic, and I
Yeah.
think maybe it's a little bit early. Well, I have one more thing to say about like game playing,
Yeah, do it.
and I think it depends. Like we've talked so much about like player getting on the same page with your group and stuff like that, and we've talked a lot about like sort of the issues about like you know a silly group doing a serious thing. I mean, there are games that are more serious and games that are meant to be sort of more you know less jokey, and you know the joking at the table happens like outside of character, not in character, I guess. Because and so like I guess play maybe the problem is that I don't play those kind of games, and so then I'm trying to like bring a bit more serious tone into a generally sillier game. Whereas, like, if you're playing, I'm one of the other examples I was thinking about was Gutterpunk, which is a game that is, you know, it's silly and it's magic, you know, magic punks playing music and rocking out. But then there's like the man, and so I tried to make an adventure for that game that was sort of a really serious topic in there, and I didn't quite succeed at what I was trying to do. I mean, this one didn't get played. This is just writing an adventure, but it's like. At least that game is a little more serious because it's literally about fighting the man and being sort of in this world that is sort of like echoes of our own world. It, you know, the gutter where everyone lives is, you know, it's all barter. That's the it's only, you know, skills for skills and stuff like that because there is no economy because it's this weird world of, you know, trash echoes. Basically, everything that's lost from our world ends up in the gutter, which is this other dimension, and including you, the player characters, you know, and then you're in the gutter, and what do you do in the gutter? And so it's got this sort of, I mean, it can be whatever it wants, but it's like, you know, my story was basically like, I do not know that I don't know if I can save my friends from capitalism, was basically like my story. And it's like in I created an NPC that like I tried to get the people to be friends with, you know, like oh tell the story of like what you were, but then that person chooses to like side with the forces of the man because they don't want to live in the gutter, you know, they want to have a nice house and be clean, and that's like sort of against the theme of the game, and that's sort of the tension that I was trying to bring into the story, right? And I don't know that as a piece of writing it's duck the landing of making that the point. But at least starting with a game that is supposed to be more serious maybe helps, right? So anyway, I don't know.
No, I mean, it's a hard task. A really easy task to do is I'm going to write an adventure where they have to escort the princess to the castle. Like, that's super easy. That's easy to accomplish. And the more writerly stuff you add to that, the more theming, the more characterization, the more plot, the more setting that you do, the you're just multiplying the likelihood that you're going to fall flat on something. That's just writing. Not every piece of writing is going to be 100% perfect. And I think that's another thing too, is that you should always be prepared to fail in a way. Like, how are you going to pivot if this is not working? Are you going to stop the episode completely? Are you going to pivot off of it and pretend it never happened? Or like, are you going to bring down the hammer of the heavy fiends if they start goofing off? Like, how are you going to handle that, based off of your group? Do all the other good GMing things. But I think that you should be prepared to not do it correctly, because you're writing, and that's what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the theme, you could put them out there. Like, I don't think I'll be ever able to not try to put serious threads into the story. And then, you know, if nobody ever picks up on them, you know, they were there for me all along, I guess.
Well, it's one of those things. I think we've talked about this before, where, you know, some people might pick up on it, some people might not. Even within just your player group, like there's some people that'll be like, oh, like what was the thing? Like you wrote a some, who were we talking to? It was on the podcast, and somebody ran an adventure, and one of the players afterwards said, oh, you know, that game was, oh, it was, we were talking to Eddie Webb, and he said, like that game was really about, oh, what was the topic? It was some kind of heavy topic. Oh, I can't think of what it was.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I wasn't it
Didn't.
like about it was like
But
about
one of his players was like, oh, you just told the story about like this very serious kind of real world thing.
Yeah, it was like immigration or something like that.
Yeah.
Wasn't
But
it the
having
cats,
it was a cat, you know, it was in
the monarch
Pugmire,
is
so it
in,
was cats and
yeah.
dogs.
Yes.
And so you can do that sort of thing. And so
It
you
was
don't,
racial profiling because the cat
yes,
was
right. You don't
arrested
have,
in the dog world or whatever.
right, and you
Something
don't
like
have
that.
to assume. You don't have to hang your success or failure on, did everybody get it? Did everybody get into it? Did everybody accept it? Like, it might have been an entertaining story that maybe only one or two of the players kind of, they came away with it being like, oh, that was kind of satisfying that we delved into this thing for a little while. And you can hang your success on that. Not to belittle the whole idea or everything, but like one of the quotes from you know, one of the creators, I think it came from Joel Hodgson, from one of the, you know, the creators of Mystery Science Theater 3000, is, you know, they have those really, really obscure jokes that they make, the comments they make back to the screen. And he made the comment, like somebody asked him, like, you know, why are you peppering in such weird obscure stuff? And he's like, not everybody's going to get every joke, but sometimes there's going to be a joke where the right person's going to get it. Like, this is the joke for that demographic. This is like, I've watched it because I know those guys grew up in like Wisconsin and Minnesota, and so there are Wisconsin and Minnesota jokes in there. There are things that only people from Wisconsin and Minnesota, or who know those two states really well, are going to get the joke. It happens like once every five episodes, but they're in there.
Awesome
And
telling
they feel
jokes
like,
for
it
me.
feels like a little thing for me. Like, that's, oh, they wrote that joke for me personally. And so you might end up with players that come out of it the same way, being like, okay, not everybody was into this, but Matt, you know, wrote this adventure for me. Like, this is for me to enjoy this little thing, and you can hang your success on that.
And if you want those moments as a player, talk to your GM. I often like send private messages to my GM being like, hey, you know what'd be really fun for me if you did this for me? And then I get my wish. It's a little present just for me that they put in there, like, ooh, thank you for this character that I wanted, or thank you for this little plot that I wanted. And it is always very satisfying because it's going to be digested through your GM and come out differently than you had ever imagined. So even if you think it won't be a surprise anymore, if you tell them that you want this twist ending, it's going to be a surprise to you. And it'll be fun. It'll be a surprise to everyone else too, because you're
Yeah,
keeping
and even if you know it's coming, like I've talked about that plenty of times with, like, you watch a movie and he's like, you know, kind of like, well, we know the good guy's gonna win at the end of this thing, but it's not about the ending, it's about the journey. How does the good guy win? How is the story told?
The real journey is the friends we made along the way.
Yes, the real journey is like,
That sounds
is
like
the
a theme,
personal
like
inside jokes
who
that
they had to
were made
shoot in
just
order
for
to
me.
win.
So we have a GMing segment here too, which is very similar. I know we had talked about it a little bit earlier on in this episode, and I feel like this is a good time to jump into it too.
Yeah.
What is your game about as a designer?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like I said, I think I've kind of paired these two topics because they're kind of
Yeah.
the same thing. And I was thinking about like what kind of things I could share. And since I mentioned earlier in this episode, Garbage and Glory is almost out. Like, I ask myself, and I don't know, I think I was listening to Jay Dragon talk about this, and like her game design stuff is really challenging, because she's very thoughtful about like what she's doing, and it's not necessarily what I think of as game design and stuff like that. So I think this is where I started thinking about this was when I was working on Garbage and Glory over the last couple of years, and like, what is your game about, and who's telling the story of the game, and like, is there a narrator within the game that they're explaining how to play, and these ideas. So I was thinking about this and from Garbage and Glory, and so that was in my mind already. I'm like, what is this game about? Like, it's about the art is of raccoons wearing trash and trash that has been made up into armor and bows and arrows and stuff like that. So it's like, that's the art. That's how the game started. It's like, great. That's what it's about. It's about going on adventures as raccoons. And so we made crafting rules, and we made, glorious, you can make bets and boost yourself up with card play to like, oh yeah, well, I slayed 700, animated action figures, like what it, you, there's this boasting element to it. It's supposed to be fun, right? But what is the game about? Like, that's what you do in the game, but what is the game about, right? And so then one of the writers, Michelle Lee, that we've worked with on a bunch of stuff, she wrote like the history of like the history section, and she put in these stuff that was like, the oldest stories say that like ogres didn't used to like have trash. Like, ogres are the what the raccoons call the humans. So like, ogres didn't used to have trash like this. Like, there used to be just nature. There used to be just trees. And then, like, at some point, the ogres invented all this kind of trash. And she specifically referred to like new ogres came from somewhere else, and now there's trash, and that has like revolutionized our society. So with that one line, then suddenly the game is about like colonization and the way in which like the landscape of North America has been changed by like Western style city building. And it's like, and so then I tried to meet that one little history section with like a quote at the beginning of the book, which I found about exactly that, talking about how like the very name of the raccoon comes from one particular native language, and it's the word that we use in English, and who was the one who said that this is what this creature was called? It was John Smith, a famous colonizer guy. And he's the one who was in a position of power as a colonizer to say, like, this is what this creature is called. And so now that's the word that's used in all the European languages because he said so, but he's not necessarily any more of an authority than anyone else. And it also erases all of the other native names for this creature and their cultural. Anyway, I found this great quote and I put it in the epigraph of the book, right? Because I love a book that has an epigraph in it. And so, like, then. This is like the first page of the book is like this quote about how like Western civilization has overwritten the like culture of the raccoons, and then now you're going to be invited to play in that and delve for trash and make armor out of like CDs and stuff like that. But like, does that make the game about colonization? Because there's only a few little points when it is there. But then if you say it's a theme because you put it in there a few times, that's my story, right? So like, is it about just going on fun adventures, or is there more to the game? And like, the answer is yes, question mark, in both halves. So anyway, that's my own story that I was thinking about as this example about like trying to be intentional about what your game is about. And like, obviously some games are much more, I mean, my company is, we produce sort of games that are more, we try to be fun and broad with our pitches for our games. We don't have like games that are like, we don't make type two fun games, like, so
Never Going Home isn't a type two fun game.
well, I mean, fair, good point, good point.
Never Going Home is a wonderful horror. Well, horror games tend to kind of skew anyway, but yeah,
Right. I mean,
definitely.
it's, you're never going home. You're
Horrors of
you
War kind of
Horrors of
game.
War, yes. Well, I mean, that's, thank you for bringing that up, because that's another game where it's like, I mean, what is that game about? That game is about like using a machine gun to shoot a zombie that used to be your friend. Yay. But it's also like about like war is really bad and maybe we shouldn't do it as a species.
And it's
So
about
it's,
survival in the most extreme circumstances. And it's
well,
about, it can be about the camaraderie of the people who are thrust into these situations. And that's historical. That's something that we saw. There's bonds that were that are created by people who have been to war together. So if you pepper all of that stuff in there, it gives a depth to the world. And it allows people who are playing the game, GMs who are prepping adventures, to use that stuff or not.
No, yeah, like, it's a
you can play the game fun and like, oh, we're just trash pandas and we're running around, like you said, making armor out of discarded CDs, or we're gonna like talk about, we're gonna have a discussion about like where this world came from as part of one of the adventures.
Yeah.
That's the really fun thing about games as a medium when you're writing them, because it's not just a game, it's also the individual sessions that people are playing. And some games are designed to be like a fully a one-on-one shot. They have a full theme in there, they have character set up, they have a plot, they have a setting, and the game designer in those cases have way more control over what the theme is. They can be much more specific. But if you're writing a game that is intended to be episodic in a way, or is intended to be a variety of possible one shots, even, a lot of that specific theming is then up to the writer of those modules or the players themselves and the GMs themselves. And mm-hmm. your job is trying to provide that toolbox. So for example, like you can see this in TV shows, for example, Game of Thrones is about a lot of things. It's about dragons, it's about zombies, it's about court politics, it's about the War of Roses, it's about weird family relationships. And different episodes
handle...
It's a good
list to start.
There's even more. there's some other stuff in there too. And each episode is, and sometimes even each character arc follows a different theme. And they intersect in a lot of ways, but the TV show itself still has this kind of overall feeling and wrapper, because that's the toolbox that you're providing. Like Craig, like you said, you're giving them all the stuff to set it up with. You're creating the box of Legos. Like, yes, would this box of Legos be the best at recreating the Eiffel Tower? Sure, all the pieces are that color and they all match. But you could create all sorts of things. Could you?
I could make a dinosaur.
You could make a dinosaur. Could you create Barbie's dream house? Probably not. There's no pink in there. But with a different toolbox, maybe you could. Like, I think you're giving them all the supplies, all the paint supplies, all the colors, and with them they can kind of remix those different adventures. But like I said, if you're doing a one shot, like I think LARPs do this really well. Like one-shot LARPs are really good at picking a particular theme and running with it, like setting it up. But then so much of that is because when you're in a LARP, you as the GM don't have as much creative direction. Once the game is in play, all of the work is kind of behind the scenes, like getting it set up, and then the players are into it. So I'm gonna tell you about a LARP that I'm gonna do in September that I'm playing. It's called Conclave. It's exactly what it sounds like. You are in the papal election.
Yeah,
of
I was gonna say, you're electing a pope.
Yep, you're electing a pope in 1268. Obviously, very particular setting. Obviously, a very particular type of place. There are so many things that this LARP could be about, and I won't know as a player until I get in there, see my character, and then see what everybody else's characters are, and then we'll make it work. And that's like one of the really cool things about player interpretation of a game. Like, that's why games are so cool as literature.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, right. I don't know. I think the toolkit thing is sort of I mean, you're always making a game that is a toolkit, right? I mean, the often comparison, right? It's like I talk to a lot of people that, like, I mean, this is a sort of a whole other topic, but so I'll try to be brief. But, like, you know, people talk about, like, oh, this you should have just written a novel. If this is what you wanted to happen, you should have just written a novel, you know.
Yeah.
And I think there are people who have storytelling brains that write novels or short stories, and they're great. There are other people who I've talked to explicitly about, like, I mean, I can do that, but I think I like more creating the toolkit. And then there are ways that I've built into games where, like, you could put the pieces together into Barbie's dream house. But if you really want to make the Tour Eiffel, you can, like, it's the same pieces, they'll fit there, you know? So that is making a toolkit and giving the toolkit away and seeing what other people do with it is sort of a different, scratches a different itch or whatever. And then, so then, if some of the pieces are serious pieces or they're hitting on themes or whatever, then how do those, do they use those pieces in their gameplay or whatever? The other thing I was thinking about it and it's because it's sitting right here on my desk because I was just playing it, but Steamboat Willie, which is Jess, you're in Alex's game, I was look, it says on the cover that it's a solo cartooning TTRPG celebrating the death of a copyright. Like you're putting out there on the cover of the book what it's about in that respect, right?
Well, I
And
hope
then
so. I hope to make it very clear that it's also satire, just in case Disney gets any ideas about suing.
well, I don't know what you're talking about. There's no, they're not mentioned at all in here. But like, I mean, when you can put a game title like that, I mean, this particular one that I just read is a little longer than normal, but like you often have RPGs that have like a subtitle, like a game about, punks on the moon or a game about whatever. They say what the game is about, as part of the subtitle, or just a, a cover blurb or whatever. I mean, is that, I don't know. I guess what I'm asking is like, is that enough, right? Is if you say it is about this thing, then it is as for you as a designer, and I guess then you see what the people do with the pieces, I guess, like the example we were talking about.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. I think my answer for that is yes and no. I think that like saying something is about something is enough for a lot of media, but it's not going to be satisfying for a lot of people. And that's like my complaint too, often about games. Often about anti-fascist games. Like you say this game is an anti-fascist game, but where is the anti-fascism is something that I've seen. You do
It's an anti-fascist aesthetic or something like that.
yeah, there's a difference between like a theming in terms of style and a theming in terms of the interior. And like sometimes it's left a little open for the players to interpret, and sometimes it might not be obvious, and sometimes it's a complete flop. Like sometimes I meant to do this and I meant you to think of this, but it turns out that it's not evoking, it's only evoking evocative in my head. Again, the dangers of writing. If I say that this game is about being about your bisexual awakening. And then it is a game about ordering ice cream. And I'm playing this game and thinking, where's the bisexuality? What's happening? That might be a play on the by the author to make you think about, okay, how am I turning this ice cream game into a game about discovering my bisexuality? That could be a really interesting thing, even if it's not within the actual text of the game. It at least makes you think.
I feel like it's akin to a situation where an artist presents their work. This is my thing. This is the art that I created. And then somebody comes in and interprets it personally for them. And then the artist says, well, what I was doing with this art was X. And the person says, well, what I see is Y. Or the person says, oh, okay, I can see X in that. And there's, it's just like how open you are to picking up on that. Like if you said this game is about X, like somebody out there who's looking for a game that, to use Jess's example, for who's looking for a game or interested in a game about awakening their bisexuality is going to look at the ice cream game and go, oh, I can see like this and this and this. And they'll like people make leaps. Like it's metaphor and it's impression and emotion and person, it's things that are relatable or personal. And so you could easily have a game that says my game is about X, Y, and Z, and just kind of barely kind of dust those things in there. And there will be people who will find plenty of support for your statement. And there's some people who will not see it at all because they're just not picking up on a thing that fits that.
They don't have the tools to do so. Like they're if
Or
until
the
I learn more
interest,
about
or
art,
yeah.
until I learned even a little bit about art, I was like, I don't know how to interpret art. And now I know how to interpret art a little bit. I'm like, oh, there's so much more meaning packed in here. I think it also takes a certain amount of, I am not, however, there are, I'm not saying that if you don't understand something, it's because you suck. Sometimes you don't understand something because the author is not making a coherent statement. That is true. It happens. It happens in games a lot.
Right. The novel M Mao 2 by, is it Don DeLillo? Like, I don't know what that novel's about. The author says it's about stuff, but I don't know. I didn't read it in there. Anyway, that doesn't, I don't want to get sidetracked there, but like
I have tried. I've been holding my tongue about Christopher Nolan because I wanted to talk about him, but I'm only just going to mention his name. Continue.
but I
Well, Craig, I want to say real quickly that I think it depends on like the like if this ice cream game is a 200 word RPG, which is a format for games that like if it's like eat a bowl of ice cream and think about how that is a symbol for your bisexual awakening and end of game, like that's the game, and it doesn't have a lot in there maybe for you. It's like, but it was only 200 words. Like it I think I think about Sharang Biswas's game. I think it's called Varun or Varung. It's like you make a salad and then you eat it, and like basically like that's the game. It's like 4 pages, but it's like every ingredient you put in is like you're responsible for this mess that you made, and now you must eat your salad and think about it. Like it entirely depends on like how much you put into it, about how much you get out of that experience of making and eating a salad. But it's also only 4 pages. I think if you're playing a game that's doesn't have anything in it, but it's like a 250-page game, they maybe should have put some more in it, n not let you bring your stuff to it. But if it's a shorter game that it can, it's sort of like enough to declare that this is what this is, almost in a single sentence. That's enough of a game
Right.
if it's a small game, I
It's
think.
also enough if you're bringing enough to the table, because as I'm sitting here and thinking about this, I'm thinking about all the ways, metaphorically speaking, ordering ice cream is relevant to the bisexual experience. There's so one scoop, two scoop. Why can't I blend them? Can you give me half of one and half of the other? No, I want chocolate and vanilla. Can I get a swirl? Like,
Does the
I
chocolate
mean,
go on the cone first and then the vanilla, or does the vanilla go
yeah.
on the cone first and then
Which
the
one do I
chocolate?
actually like more? I don't know.
I
Where's
mean, this is
I
the
like
where's
both, but
Neapolitan?
I'm feeling vanilla today, but I like chocolate too. Like there's like I but I'm bringing the text as the player.
Well,
Right.
that's what I mean by like it's fine if it's a short game, because
Right.
any game that's very short almost relies on, like a work of art, relies on like the interrelationship of like a painting, and not a work of art in general, like especially a painting. Like I painted this big huge mural painting, and it's on the wall, and it's called like Landscape 3, and you look at it and you're like, okay, maybe that's mountains, I don't know, clouds are over here, I think, but like that interaction is the process, right? And that
Yeah.
works with a visual picture where you're not explaining yourself, and I think it works with a short game where you're like, this is what this game is about. Like you just said with the ice cream stuff, like I think that's all the stuff that was in my head when you were talking about the example in the first place, where it's like that can be a game.
Trying to think of two things that were completely separate, and I made it happen anyway. That's
Well,
my fault.
but I think when it's a, like
but
it's
that's the
a
beauty of
art,
art.
but it's a con, yeah, when you've got that concept, it's enough. But if the concept is strong, I think it resonates because you're inviting your craft, you have to craft it in a certain sort of way that invites the person to put a lot of themselves into it. Even if it's a small game, 1 page, 200 words, 4 pages,
Right.
you want to make a very inviting product that like invites the person to think about your question in a way that brings them into the game. The giant Fantasy Heartbreaker style game, you have to put a lot more into it to facilitate those storytelling. I'm thinking about because we just came back from, I'm thinking about it's over there on my show, Veiled, Failed and Fallen by our friend Robert Turk. Like, well, I don't, he's my friend. I don't know if he's your friend, but
He's my
like we
friend.
know him. We know
Nah.
him.
Kidding,
I don't want
Robert,
to declare
kidding.
what your relationship is. Hey, Robert. Hey, has Robert been on your show? But anyway,
No. No.
his game, I mean, it's 100, it's like 250 pages, or not 250, it's like 180 or something like that pages. It's a sizable book, and it definitely is about something, because in that game you're playing like 20 years ago, you were children in a fantasy realm, and you were the destined, the chosen ones to save the realm, but you were like all like 13, and you failed to save the realm because you were all children and you didn't know anything. And like, then you returned to, you lived your normal life, and now you've been coming back to the world, and everything is awful because you failed to save the realm. But now you're adults now, and you've got like hopefully more skills, but you're still cleaning up your messes from like when you were a child. And there's all of these rules that are in there to like build that story, right? You're always telling stories around the campfire, and you've got a history that you create, and like one of your companions died. And so you have to create their character sheet, which like that's the power that, because it's a PBTA style game and everybody has a different playbook, that playbook is forbidden because that chosen one died. So you have to choose whose powers you won't have. And then like they've got names and you're always bringing back their story and finding out more about your first time in the realm and all this stuff. So there's a bunch of rules that are focused on creating that story of
Yeah.
like loss and redemption. And so it's 100, so it's almost 200 pages of that stuff because you have to scaffold in all that stuff, because it's not just like, I don't know, what if it's a game about tasting different flavors? You know, it's a big work that it requires all of that game rules to tell that narrative in that very particular way that he wanted to. And I think it's great, but you know, it's certainly not a flavor for everyone. You know, when you pitch like the whole thing, like, oh yeah, you're the Pevensies from Narnia, except like, you know, Edmund died, and you've got to go back and sort stuff out, you know.
I know that we're pushing time a little bit, but I recently attended a little professional development for journalism advisors, and one of the sessions was about yearbook, and I don't advise yearbook. Yearbooks have a theme often, like the time of our lives or cool adventures. I don't know. It's yearbook stuff. But the presenter walked us through an exercise that I think is so useful, and I've been sharing it in every opportunity I can, which was think about the theme and then take a moment to brainstorm all of the different possible ways you could interpret this theme within specific design elements of your yearbook, or specific headlines in the yearbook, specific stories in the yearbook, and going through that process. And I thought, God, you could do this with a game. Think about like the name of your game, or like the theme statement of your game. Because yearbooks also apparently you put a theme statement in to like figure out like what your design. This was one of her tips. You could do the same thing with your game and then think like, okay, if this game is about coming back to a time, like basically doing the Narnia thing, but coming back after you failed. Like, what are some mechanics? Well, having a failure mechanic, having this, having a, like all like what are all the different ways? And then looking at your list and thinking like, okay, what's going to be coherent? What do I want to include? I mean, I think that's just a really good brainstorming tip for like the beginning of your game writing adventure. And you could also do that with your adventure itself. If you wanted to write an adventure for Capers, like, okay, Caper, it's about superheroes, it's about gangsters, it's about this, it's about that. What are some plays on this theme that I could dig into? And that's just the core book. Let's not go into all the supplements. There, we could riff on that for a really long time. And it's just a really good brainstorming exercise, I feel.
Yes, that sounds great. I'm like, what is the shat? What is the version of the Shadow radio show in the Capers world when like the Capers exist? Like, do they
Yes.
have a radio show? Like, that's just the first thing my brain went to as far as like, what are all the possibilities? I'm like, what's the, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, you could absolutely extrapolate. Like, it does mention in the Capers book that that people with powers, who are called Capers in the game, are essentially the first tabloid celebrities. They have things that, you know, they have stories written about them that are akin to dime novels, where there are these sensationalized stories about larger than life personalities. And that's kind of as far as that goes, but you could certainly, you know, absolutely extrapolate that out into all sorts of other things. That's one of the
Gonna
things
write one
I
up and put it
tend to
on
do
AO3.
with that sort of stuff is I pepper stuff in there and just let people build. And soon we're on a future episode, we're going to be talking about setting and lore, and that's like one of the things that we'll talk about is like
Yeah.
how much do you get really deep into that sort of thing, or do you just give a, oh, here's a few ideas that kind of get the point across, and you can the GM or the players can kind of build off of that.
I like the yearbook example that you shared, Jess, because I'm thinking about like I did the creative magazine in my own high school my senior year, and we did I think we had a theme of like the end is the beginning is the end, or the be end is the beginning is, because it was 1999, and so we put the Ouroboros on the cover, and like none of the stuff inside was about like endings or beginnings necessarily, but it's like in like a baby untrained way, we were getting at that thing like what's going to be on the cover. And I think
Yeah.
that and like chapter headings and stuff like that, and I think that's the answer. Those are some of the answers to that question about like how can you communicate this theme in every aspect of the game. I
Yeah.
mean, that's how you end up with like Doom Metal Morkborg looking the way it does, is like they're like, we're gonna go for this theme of this is like a heavy metal album cover in an RPG format. Like, we're gonna do it with the title treatment, we're gonna do it with the title page, we're gonna do it with the like font choices, we're gonna
We're
do
going to
it
do
with
it with
the.
every individual page as if it
Yeah.
were a different heavy metal album cover.
I mean, right. And they commit to the bid, and like,
Yeah.
good on Stockholm Collective for doing that. But like, that's that. I mean, I think that's part of the reason why that has had such a meteoric success, because it's like it hits the same note on every level, and then you have to, you can't not notice it because it is so aggressive in its like presentation,
Yeah.
so
And
yeah.
extremely replicable, as you can see from the variety of other games that have tried to follow in its footsteps,
Sure.
which is another key of success, I feel.
Absolutely. Sure.
That's a hard one to reach. Do we have any final thoughts on this topic? I could talk about this forever. Like we could, but we technically have another recording to do after
Yeah,
this.
you gotta get
Let's just bring him on the call.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
The call continues. New topics. I don't have any necessarily final thoughts. Ready. I don't have any final thoughts ready. Give me a second. While I talk, while I stumble.
Craig, do you have final thoughts or?
No, I'm good.
Okay, Matt,
We've covered a
spotlight.
lot.
We did.
We have covered a lot, and I think it. I said the word intention earlier, and everything is politics is something I said, or everything is political, I guess, is what I said. It's like, and so like I think that's what I'd like to close on, because like the, I mean, make your game about something, please. Like if your game is just some cool, I don't know, visuals or whatever, I mean, that's fine and all, like, but like I don't know, like I think games should be about something, and I don't mean you're gonna play a do I mean I don't know what Morkborg is about, but like I'm sure it's about something, given the way that those I've met them in the creators in passing, right? They have politics, I'm sure, and they have opinions, and I'm sure that's revealed in the game. And I think it will be, whether you want it to be, I think your politics will be revealed in your work, whether you want it to be or not. So you might as well be intentional about it. There's my final
And
thought.
you can be as blatant and blunt and upfront about it as you want, or you can be subtle about it. Like if you don't feel comfortable getting really down and dirty, you can pepper stuff in there too, and just make sure that, just have that kind of like, oh, there's this thing going on, there's this other thing, here's this theme, and here's this kind of through line that's carrying through the entire setting that kind of ties it all together, and it has a little it's a metaphor for something in the world, or it's a metaphor for an experience that a person can have or whatever. You don't it doesn't have to all be, this is my ice cream eating game about bisexual awakening that's really like right in your face.
I mean, don't know. You should make that game, Jess. Absolutely.
I'm already thinking about it, but I have so many other things I actually have to do.
Isn't that the way?
And you know what? You could also, if none of this is up your alley and you want to make something really, really cool and you have like this really good, cool aesthetic and theme as in style theme that you want to do and you hit it just right, you pull a Morkborg, you will have, again, I'm not saying that Morkborg is bereft of politics or anything, but Chris, like a Christopher Nolan film, bring it back to him, you will have fanboys and fan people clamoring to defend the themes that they are seeing because your style was so cool and it evoked the text that lies inside of themselves. That's hard to pull off, but there's your cheat. There's your cheat for it. Matt, thank you so much for coming and talking to us about this theme. I could go on for days.
It's been a pleasure. It's always fun to talk to you too.
Where can we find your stuff and what do you got going on?
Well, like some of my stuff is on the what was it the oh, is it Seabound Beauty, I think, or C-SPAN, C-SPAN Beauty. It's on the C-SPAN Beauty right now, some of my stuff. But the stuff that's available to purchase is you can find Wet Ink Games at DriveThruRPG, or at a lot of our stuff is at IPR, or your friendly local game store. We've got a decent reach across around the country and even internationally. I know some of my games are for sale in Berlin because I see pictures of them on Instagram. So you can find our stuff around. We're Wet Ink Games at pretty much all of the things. I do interviews at Wet Ink Games on YouTube, and we got a pretty active Instagram and Facebook. So find us where we are. We're Wet Ink Games pretty much everywhere.
I
That's
think you can
us.
also find one of your games at vote.any-awards.com/vote/2025.
Oh, absolutely, you can. This we are speaking of Garbage and Glory, the quick start that we did last year for the game, which contained rule summary and some characters and a short adventure, all in a free product for Free RPG Day. That has been nominated for Best Free Game. So Sam's art, Matthias's layout, Josh Heek wrote the adventure. It's a fantastic team, and yeah, we're up for Best Free Game. So yeah, we'd appreciate your vote there. And we gave away all our printed copies for that for Free RPG Day, but you can download it on DriveThruRPG. It's called Trash Run is the name of the adventure, so you can get it there. Thanks.
You can find me on Blue Sky at Joska or on Discord at Joska. And you can find my games on Itch. We've delisted all of our stuff from DriveThruRPG for right now at wannabegames.itch.io.
And I am Nerdburger Craig on various social medias. The website is nerdburgergames.com. The games can be found there and on DriveThruRPG. And coming up on Tuesday, October 7th, will be that's the pretty solid date for the Cosmic Corsairs Kickstarter launch, where you can go and fly starships and wield cosmic power and beat the living tar out of the Triarchy, the brutal regime that controls most of 10 planets.
Oh, I forgot. I do have a small thing to promo. If you are looking for something cool to do on Saturday noon at Gen Con, you can check out our Dune LARP that I am helping to write. There are still slots available if you want to play a game about Bene Gesserits and court politics and weird space freaks. Anyway, thank you to our opening and closing theme song, which is Avil by Steph Sax, licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you, Steph Sax, and thank all of you for listening. And we'll see you back here next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Love weird space.